All right, so welcome to our continuation in our study in the book of Ecclesiastes. This morning we're going to be looking at the same lesson that we looked at last time, covering verses chapter 1, verse 3 through chapter 2, verse 21. So last week or last lesson, we did not finish all of that text, but we are going to be focusing on the same section because it is one section. And it's one section that's answering the question, and you know, with a couple different angles to it, that he poses in chapter 1, verse 3, right? Which is, what is the advantage, or what advantage, what profit does a man have, okay, in all the work in which he does under the sun? Okay, so this is the governing question of this section. And everything that goes on, right, you know, until chapter 2, verse 22, which is a second question. Okay, so starting our next lesson, we're going to be dealing with a very related question, but a slightly different nuanced question. Okay, so so this first section, and the reason why I'm, you know, it's quite a bit of text to kind of consider in one class, and while we're doing it in two classes, because it's pretty long. It all does roll up under this one question. Okay, what is the profit? What's the advantage? What can you get out of the work that you do underneath the sun? So one thing we talked about last time was a particular objection that a young man or a young woman might have to the answer he's going to give. And this objection is, you've tried these different things, Solomon, right? You've tried pleasure. You've tried grand achievements. You've built gardens and parks and castles and large buildings. You've accumulated a lot of treasure, Solomon. And you've come to the conclusion that those efforts that you did, Solomon, were not enough, right? They didn't give you meaning. You didn't find meaning there. But as a young person, I'm looking at you, Solomon, saying, well, maybe there's just something you didn't try, right? The next big thing, right? You know, in our society, we love that, right? The next big thing, okay? And everyone gets real excited about the next big thing because the next big thing is going to give you that meaning you're looking for, right? That fulfillment you're looking for, that, you know, that emptiness is going to finally be filled if you can just get the next big thing. And so he begins this section with the poem where he concludes that there's nothing new under the sun. Okay, there's nothing new that you're going to be able to do that is going to somehow invalidate Solomon's inquiry. Okay, so a great example is, I don't know if y'all are following what's going on in Saudi Arabia right now, but the king there is building some unbelievably large monuments in Riyadh and just a few, you know, multiple projects that he's doing that are dwarfing anything that's ever been built. I don't know if he's going to finish them or not, okay, but it's a great example. If you haven't seen them, just the audacity, right? The gaudiness of these projects that he's trying to do, trying to build, will just baffle your mind. That any human would think they could actually get away with doing it. But even if he does get away with doing it, and his building that he builds, and he's building this huge cube in Riyadh, you know, that's going to be this giant building with unbelievable tech, okay, involved. So it's kind of like, anyway, I don't want to go into the details, but let me tell you what he's going to find, right? When he finishes these, assuming he finishes them, is that he's going to finish these great monuments for whatever purpose that he's doing it, and he's still not going to be able to secure, right, eternal significance through those monuments. He's not going to be able to do it, even though, right, they are perhaps more grandiose than Solomon, okay? All right, Solomon had 1,000 wives, okay? Right? Well, if you had 2,000 wives, is that really the problem, Douglas? Right? I mean, Solomon just didn't go big enough, right? Is that the problem? 800 concubines? If he had had 1,600 concubines, he would have found meaning and pleasure. Josh, I'm asking you. No, Josh is like, I'm not sure. The more women to deal with. Okay, now you're speaking like an old man. All right. Right? See, all the old men, they're like, oh, you're crazy. The young men are like, maybe. They're not real sure, right? Like, I'm not sure. 1,000? Anyway, you know, they're not clear, but they will be clear. So this is the first objection that he handles at the very beginning, is that Solomon, there's other things out there, right? We'll find something new, okay? And Solomon's like, nope, nothing new under the sun. Generations come, generations go, right? The sun, the earth continues forever. That is not going to be the case. And then he goes into his inquiry, okay, or search, where he looks at the pleasure, achievements, and treasure. Comes to his conclusion, and then he ends this section with an inquiry into wisdom. And it turns out that is actually, believe it or not, a second objection, okay, to his search. And that is not the objection that there's nothing new, but that there's nothing better. Maybe the quality, right, of what Solomon had done wasn't just quite good enough. If he had just done it at a higher level of wisdom, right? If he had just been able to pursue wisdom to its nth degree and received, and he was the Buddha under the tree with the enlightenment, right? If you just found enlightenment, right? Then once you found enlightenment, then everything would just kind of come together, and you would have it figured out, and you would have you would be able to obtain ultimate meaning. So I think this section we're going to look at today, which is this inquiry in wisdom, is connected to the search. I think in the area of simply not can I do something new, but what if I had just done it better, right? Solomon, you had your 1,000 wives. Well, maybe you just didn't treat them right, or just didn't handle the situation as wisely, and if we just did it better, I could find meaning in pleasure or hedonism, okay? Or if it, pick what it is, right? This is the illustration about, what's going on in Riyadh right now, okay? Qatar, right? You built the tallest building in the world, right? The Grand Khalifa. Well, I'm Saudi Arabia, and you think that building is tall, you should see what I'm building, right? If I just did it bigger, better, more wise, more, if I had just done it, in a better way, I would be able to obtain ultimate meaning that way. So let's get an example. So everyone's familiar with Michelangelo's David, right? The unbelievable work of art that he carved in his lifetime. Let's just use that as an example of someone who did their work with wisdom, right? And when remember, in biblical concept of wisdom, it is very pragmatic. Okay, we're not talking about simply knowledge, even though that's part of wisdom, is knowledge. But wisdom, in especially in the book of Ecclesiastes, is very much practical, right? And it's how you take what you know and applying it in a way that gives you the best outcome. So you've got Michelangelo; he's carving this statue of King David, and let's just use him as an example and say this is the pinnacle of art, okay? Or at least of this particular type of art. And I'm sure people can debate there's better or there's worse or whatever, but let's just say for argument's sake that it is the pinnacle. Like, no one will ever carve a statue of David better than Michelangelo did. Okay? All right, just for argument's sake. So then the question is, okay, if that's the pinnacle, and in fact, we all know Michelangelo's name, don't we? So as long as that piece of art is standing, and it's still standing today, we still have it. It didn't get blown up in World War II, even though it could have, right? One errant bomb, it could have been knocked out, right? Or stolen and lost or whatever, like a lot of art has over the years. But even if that's true, can we say with confidence that Michelangelo found ultimate meaning, ultimate purpose in that piece of work? And maybe his whole corpus of work.
We could ask him.
No, we can't. We can't ask him. It didn't extend his life, did it? It didn't turn him into some sort of God king, right? Right? Like the ultimate for humanity is to be a God king, okay? Like the Pharaoh, right? Where you have this eternal existence and you reign over your domain forever. He achieved this pinnacle in his domain, right? Whether it, our art, and his name is remembered. Is there a guarantee he'll be remembered forever? There isn't, right? Even though he's been remembered for a while, there's no guarantee he'll be remembered forever. And not only that, but even at the pinnacle, we can't confidently or in any real way say, you know, his life had ultimate meaning because of that one statue. Even as beautiful as it is and magnificent as it is, right? It still doesn't ultimately mean that we can look on the other side of the grave and say, Michelangelo's in good shape. Right, we know for a fact. I've seen his statue. No, we don't do that, right? No one walks in and looks at David and go, "Wow, Michelangelo secured himself a place in eternity." You know, he is doing well in eternity because of that statue.
Tony, we don't even know that he's remembered in the way that he was expecting to be remembered when he was doing it.
Exactly, and when we talk about remembering, I just know his name. Like, I don't know anything about Michelangelo. I don't know what kind of, you know, pasta he liked in the morning or whatever he ate. I don't even know if he ate pasta.
Pizza.
Right? I don't think pizza existed. Right? I mean, I don't know anything about him, right? I mean, I don't really know him, you know? I barely know kind of, sort of, maybe what his clothes were sort of kind of like, right? They were floppy, right? Floppy-type clothes, right? And bright colors, right? I mean...
Did he wear a monocle?
A monocle? Yeah, did he? I don't know. I mean, I don't really know him, right? I mean, he's not remembered in the sense that I really know who he is, right? I mean, I just know his name. That's kind of vapid, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's like fame, right? We have famous people today that a lot of people know their name, but they don't know them. They don't really know them. And if you were to talk to that person who's famous, right? I mean, do they value the fact that everyone knows their name? I mean, maybe if the person's buying their music or whatever, right? Then as a customer, but it's a customer, right? It's just client relationship. So, yeah. Anyway, point is that I think we all can agree that even at the peak of a person's domain of knowledge and expertise, that even at the peak, it's not going to buy them, it's not going to get them what Solomon is really looking for, right? And that's ultimate profit. That's ultimate example of a life lived where you've got that advantage, you've gained that advantage, you've kind of, gamed the system, so to speak, right, under the sun. All right, so let's move on, because that's just the introduction. We have this question, and in 1:3, what advantage does a man have in all his work in which he does under the sun? And then in 2:22, a second question is going to be asked, and that'll be for next time. So we're going to end at 2:21. The answer, of course, is given. We've already went over that last time, and that is that there is no advantage under the sun. He is going to pursue those things that humans have always pursued to find meaning in their work and meaning in their life, and that is pleasure, okay? That's one. The other one is grandiose projects and work and accomplishments, achievements, and he talks about building projects and gardens and that kind of thing. you know, the that type of effort. And then the last one is treasure, right? Just storing up treasures and gold and however you define treasure, you know, storing them up here. And at the end of the day, he says that there is no, that those things are, meaningless. Okay. Now, one thing to note is that in this search that he does do, and this is what we covered last time, is it does say that he set his mind to seek and explore by wisdom. Okay. I think and this is important once again, is that by wisdom here is this idea that he is doing it with excellence. Okay. He's not just giving it a half effort. Okay. When he goes for his exploration here, he's doing it well. Okay. And this is going to be important because his next inquiry we're looking at today, which is about wisdom, it's not that he wasn't doing this inquiry wisely to begin with, okay? So it's not like he forgot to do it wisely and now he's coming back and saying, man, if I had just done it wisely. That's not the case at all, okay? He did do it with excellence. He did do it almost to an extreme or to a point where any further attempt is not going to gain you anything, okay? Right. It's like this has actually happened in architecture when it comes to, tall buildings. Right. There was a period of time where in the United States and other places, building really tall buildings was kind of a thing. And at some point, we humans kind of realized, what are we getting by going taller? Right. we've kind of gone up into the clouds already. We just gonna go further into the clouds, right? There's nothing left, right? So it is possible that in all of these areas, once you hit some point out, it's not that you've gone with an infinite number of wives, okay? But 1,000 is close enough to infinite to get the point, to figure it out. That's the idea, okay? Once you get to 1,000, you go to 2,000, you go to, there's not any difference, okay? It's just, right, you've plumbed that the depths of that, inquiry to a point where there's nothing new, okay? You're not going to find anything different if you go further. So, in fact, you see this in the example I talked about earlier in Saudi Arabia today, is that they're building these grand projects, but none of them are actually trying to go taller than what's in Kuwait, which is kind of interesting, right? That he didn't make a decision to go taller, even though he may have been able to, but he's going a different direction because I think it's the same deal. It's like, at some point you're so far in the clouds that it's no difference. So, okay. So he's done that. He's done his inquiry in chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. He introduces inquiry in chapter 1, verses 12 to 18. He defines a search, gives a proverb. We can revisit that proverb real quick before we move on to the main thing today. He says, verse 15 says, "What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted." Okay, so the idea here is that there's some things that just can't be changed. There's some rules in the universe, right? Laws of the universe that are laws. They're not changing. There is a brokenness to the world. That is here. There is a, there are limits to what God has given us as humans. He has not given us or granted us this sovereignty to define our own meaning in eternity. We just don't have, we are not, right? We cannot be God kings. We can pretend to be God kings, okay? The pharaohs, they can pretend, they can put on the facade, they can go through the rituals, they can create their myths, okay? But there, that's actually not something that we can do. Everyone still dies, including those who claim to be, gods or kings here on earth. So today we're going to look at this search for wisdom, and he introduces it in verse 17 of chapter 1. And he introduces it, and then he does his actual search for in chapter 2, verse 1 to 11, where he looks at pleasure and projects and treasure. Okay, but prior to that search, he introduces his search for wisdom. So if you would take a look at verses chapter 1, verse 17, and we'll spend a little bit of time here before we skip over to the main body. So verse 17 says, "And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly." So there's two things he wants to understand. All right. And this, of course, is in context or in relationship to his main question. But you'll notice that he places madness and folly together. OK. And so he doesn't say folly by itself. And he doesn't say madness by itself. He says madness and folly. And there's a reason for that. And that is that folly, okay, and madness sometimes are indistinguishable, right? So when a person plays the fool, in some cases, you're like, oh, that person's just foolish. It's just a foolish mistake. But in a lot of cases, especially as folly gets more extreme, okay, it's like this person's not only foolish, but they're mad. Okay, they're acting in a way that harms themselves and harms others. And at some point, it's like sometimes it's like trying to distinguish between madness and folly can be very difficult. Okay, right? Because a person who's acting extremely foolish, okay, can appear to be mad. All right, and I'm defining madness not bipolar and mental disease. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about behavior, whatever that behavior is, that is self-destructive, like hurts yourself, like you're doing something that everyone knows is self-destructive, okay, and hurting others. Okay, that's what I'm talking about madness, right? And like a lot, so you end up losing a grip with reality. You're acting in a way that everyone knows. I'm not talking about like a simple mistake, right? Or because people make mistakes all the time. That doesn't make you mad when a person makes a mistake. What makes a person mad is when they're acting in a way that's not congruent with the reality around them. Okay? And distinguishing between folly and madness, they're just kind of going hand in hand, especially as folly gets, you know, as you move down the spectrum of foolishness, okay, or of folly. Wisdom, once again, is acting in a way that's going to give you the best outcome, right? It's like acting wise, okay? And those decisions are not always obvious if you haven't made the decision before, okay? It may be that you may think, oh, if I, you're 20 years old and you're like singing the song, "I Can't Drive 55, right? Because, right, and you're like, you know, and you're when you're 20, you're like, yeah, I've got to drive fast, right? These rules aren't for me; they're for old people, okay, right? These rules aren't for me; these are rules, you know, those rules are for other people, right? I'm bulletproof; I'll never get in a wreck, right? I'll never get a ticket, right? I've never gotten a ticket, so why would I get a ticket, right? And then you get your first ticket and you're like, oh, I can get a ticket, right? You know, maybe I'll be more careful with the speed limit, you know, going forward.
You just need to know where the cops are.
There you go. Right. That's right. I'm going to get my radar detector out, right? I'm just going to game it. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so where was I? I'm completely lost. So wisdom, wisdom and folly. All right. And so his conclusion, he lets us know what his conclusion is, you know, up front. I realize that this also is striving after the wind. And he says, here's why, right? Because in much wisdom, there's much grief, and increase in knowledge increases pain. We have the same thing in English, right? We say ignorance is bliss, right? That it's a very similar concept. Knowledge, of course, you know, with knowledge comes responsibility. You know, those come together. I was really reminded of this in the sermon last week when David talked about his experience with the movie Facing the Giants. So when I saw the trailer for that movie, this has been, I don't know how many years ago, a long time ago. But when I saw the trailer, I could tell straight up, right, that there's no way on God's green earth I'm going to watch this movie. Because if I do, okay, I'm going to be so vexed at the end and upset and just, right, like I don't want that experience. Like if I can choose to not be vexed and to be upset, I will choose not to be vexed, not upset. I'm just telling you, that's good. If I have the choice, right, to not be upset and vexed, I'm not going to choose to do something that's just going to upset me. You know, that's also why I stay mostly off of Facebook. Okay, same sort of deal, right? It's like I don't like it, right? I don't enjoy being vexed and I'm not some super wise guy or some super knowledgeable person, but you know, if I have that choice, you know, what knowledge or wisdom that I do have. It can cause you grief, you know, especially when you're looking around and you see other people maybe making the same mistakes that you made, or maybe making mistakes that you didn't make, but you know are mistakes, right? And doing and living unwisely and you know, dating this guy, right? That's the typical one, right? And, you know, and everyone else is looking going, he's not good for you, right? Everyone knows. Right? Like it's real obvious, right? But, you know, she's continuing on that path, right? Or vice versa, right? The guy's doing the same thing. So will you find ultimate meaning and ultimate happiness, fulfillment in life simply by being really wise or really knowledgeable? No, you're kind of asking for sorrow and pain, actually. Okay? Now, it doesn't mean it's a bad thing, that wisdom is bad. He's going to talk about that here in a little bit. But he just, you know, but up front, at the very beginning, he's giving us the answer to his inquiry here. And that is that just because a person's wise or has knowledge or whatever isn't going to... they're not going to find ultimate fulfillment, ultimate meaning in life simply by, you know, pursuing that credential, okay, of being the wise person.
Blessed are they that mourn.
Yeah, blessed are they that mourn.
I guess that comes later.
What?
I guess that comes later in the story.
Yeah, well, once again, just to set everything straight here, we are doing our inquiry under the sun.
Yeah.
Okay. So always keep that in mind, okay, that as Christians, things are true under the sun, and then you have God breaking through and coming into our space, all right, and granting us the knowledge of salvation, right, and giving us what, you know, what we need to know and what we need to obtain eternal significance and to find eternal meaning in the life we live. Okay. And Ecclesiastes will, he's going to give us that answer as well at the end of the book. But this initial inquiry, is very much an under the sun. This is what you can expect to get apart from God. Okay. So, sorry, I should have mentioned that probably at the beginning of the class, but that's an important context, okay? Very important context to what we're doing.
It can also be said with that wisdom and with that knowledge comes the grief that we have towards the lost and the compassion that we should show and the sorrow in our hearts that they don't know, they don't have that.
Yeah.
So even then, under the sun, as we know the truth of Scripture and salvation, it should still pain us to those who are lost.
Absolutely. And we see this exemplified in Christ crying and mourning over Jerusalem. So Christ, who, you know, his, you know, the pinnacle of wisdom, is mourning over what he's seen is going to happen to the city and the people in the city.
And Paul.
And Paul.
He writes about the Jews and being so
pained. Right.
Pained that he didn't even give up his own salvation.
Right. And yet we know also that in heaven Christ will wipe away every tear. So Christ isn't in heaven today mourning over Jerusalem. In fact, he's wiping away the tears of his people. Right, that those sorrows are gone in heaven. So but under the sun, yeah, he did mourn for what he was seeing was going to happen. But in heaven he's not. Right? So that's okay. That's what we're talking about in terms of there are these conditions under the sun that aren't the same as the conditions in heaven. Are realized end times, right? Okay, so that's that first section. Let's move on now to the main piece of text we're going to look at today, and that is starting in chapter 2, verse 12. So we'll go from 12 to 21, and then we'll wrap up the section there that way, or then. So can wisdom give a person advantage, okay, under the sun, right? If we were able to just do things, you know, more excellently, if we had just more knowledge of the world, if science were to just give us, you know, better answers to how best to build the towers, right? If we just had better material science, we could build our towers taller. If we knew a little bit more agricultural concepts and knowledge about agriculture, we could, feed the world with very little effort, perhaps, and then we'd all be happy. We'd have utopia, right? I mean, if we could just pursue wisdom, and ultimately, if we just did things better, we could, you know, could we find ultimate meaning in wisdom? And so that, you know, that's kind of his question. And so let's take a look. So I turned to consider wisdom. Okay, madness and folly. These are, once again, two different sides of the same coin. Okay, you got wisdom on one side and then folly and madness on the other side. And then he references the very first section. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? So this is a very artful way of tying this section together with the poem at the beginning. So we talked last time, or a couple classes ago, about the artfulness of the book. So the artfulness of the book means that there are references to previous sections that are thrown out, and it's all part of a structure of the book where he's tying this last section about wisdom together with the first poem. Okay, he's referencing the main point of the first poem just to kind of jog your memory and, you know, don't forget, okay, what I just got through telling you because I've got something else to tell you that's related. Okay, and by doing that, the structure of the book has the search at the beginning, in the middle, we just skipped over, okay, kind of the middle of that section, right? So this becomes like a parallel section with the poem at the beginning, okay? For what will the man do who will come after the king except that what has already been done? The answer is nothing, right? There's nothing new under the sun. So, verse 13. And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Okay. So, just in case you were wondering that perhaps obtaining wisdom has no benefit at all, he wants to set us straight that that's not the case. It's much, much better to live a wise life than a foolish life. Okay? So he's, the nuance here in the Bible, in the book here, is pretty clear, right? That he is not saying wisdom is a worthless endeavor, or wisdom is a waste of your time, or there's no good reason to live a wise life, okay? And to be excellent at your work, okay? And to pursue, you know, whatever your hands to do with gusto, okay? He's going to talk about that later in the book. No, that's not true at all, okay? But there are limits to what it will get you, right? There are limits to what wisdom will get you, and he's going to talk about that. And that is that wisdom is not going to give you that ultimate advantage. It's not going to extend. It may extend. Okay, if you eat a healthy diet versus a bad diet, you may live a little longer, okay? A little bit, right? In the grand scheme of things, living that extra 2 years, right? I mean, you know, that's not the advantage that we're talking about here, okay? So he says, and yet I know, all right, in the second half of verse 14, and yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So you get a little bit of a hint here at what he means by advantage or profit, okay? Right? It definitely has something to do with extending a person's life and giving them, you know, there's some eternalness nature to it. So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. So, is it better to be wise than a fool? Absolutely. 100%, okay? Is wisdom going to give you this guarantee of eternal life, or you can live as a God king here on earth? No, it won't, right? Because the foolish people and the wise people, they all have funerals. They're all, you know, sometimes foolish people live a long time, actually, right? I mean, there's no even guarantee that a fool might not live long. They do, actually, sometimes. Sometimes they don't, you know, sometimes they do. Right? There's no guarantee one way or the other. Now, is it true that living a wise life will prevent you in many cases from experiencing certain pains that a fool experienced? Yeah, definitely. It's a good thing, right? He says here, the wise man has eyes in his head. The fool walks in darkness. A wise person, you know, has some idea of where they're going, right? Some idea. Whereas the fool is like, no, you know, they're literally, you know, walking around and they might step in a pit and fall in a hole. Okay, that's what happens when you walk in darkness, is you trip, okay? You trip over things, right? You fall, okay? You injure yourself, you hurt yourself, and you hurt others. So that's, you know, it's good to be wise, but don't think for a minute that it's going to, you know, guarantee. And you guys, maybe you're thinking, oh, that's kind of silly, Tony. Why? And does anyone really think that way? Yeah, they do, actually. You know, I mean, maybe you don't think that way, but there are a lot of people who think that that I've got my 7 rules for life, and if I follow these, I'm guaranteed a good life. I mean, this is really a prevalent teaching in the church, right? And they do it with kids as well, right? Raise a child in the way he will go, and he won't depart from it. Well, that's my promise. I put my stake in the ground, God. You've promised me that if I follow these certain rules, my kids are going to turn out perfectly. They won't depart, right? Am I wrong, Ken? What's going on? Ken? There's no guarantee? Really? Gosh, we don't like saying that, do we? And then that really, as parents, right? I want, no. Now, does that mean there isn't a wise way to raise your kids? Oh, there is. There are foolish things you can do with your kids. You can cause a lot of damage as parents. There are wise things you can do with your kids. You can bless your children unbelievably. So this isn't saying there isn't wise parenting and foolish parenting. That's not saying that. It's just saying right? These guarantees aren't there, right? That's all. You ever got the nuance? It's an important nuance in life, right? That you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, it doesn't matter what I do as a parent. I can just do whatever I want. It doesn't really matter. You know, that's like a fatalistic attitude, right? You find it in Islam, right? It's a big difference between Islam and Christianity. Not the only, but a big one, right? Is whatever God's will, right? Whatever Allah wills, right? That's what's going to happen, okay? That's fatalism. But then you have on the other side of the house, which isn't Christian either, is that, I got my rules, okay? I follow these rules. God's guaranteed me this.
And I can do all things.
And I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's right. Everything, right?
I can fly.
I can fly. Now we got the Peter Pan illustration coming into the situation. Okay, good.
This also kind of puts pay to the ignorance of bliss.
Yeah. So what's the Bible teaching here? And this is one of the most valuable things you can get out of the entire book of Ecclesiastes, is this idea that wisdom is very valuable. It is a good thing, but knowing the best way to do XYZ, being excellent at your work, doing this, and people get killed on roads all the time doing the speed limit. Okay?
Yes, they do,
right? I mean, you're going 55, right? And you still get the truck tire through the window. Okay? Right? And then the joker who was going 75 or 100, okay, got home fine. Drunk, right? You know, he's fine, right? So, I mean, you know, so does that mean you should get drunk and drive 100 miles an hour? No. No. That's not the message, okay? The message is not drive, drink, and drink and drive fast. It's not the message. The message is this nuanced position between these two errant beliefs. One is that it doesn't matter, and one is that I've got a guarantee. Neither of those things are true.
You've got a guarantee for a good life. I mean, you've got to look at what you're trying to get guaranteed.
So
if we're talking about a nuance, like what guarantee are people looking for?
That's right. Well, we know that Proverbs are always 100% of the time mostly true. Okay? With exceptions. 100% of the time, Proverbs are mostly true with some exceptions. That's the definition of proverb. Right? Proverbial. Right?
That's, it should be a proverb.
Yeah. But that's what we're looking at here, right? A wise man has eyes in his head. The fool walks in darkness. The fool may walk in darkness and not trip. They may not step in the hole. You know, get lucky, right? Or whatever, right? I mean, sometimes I go outside at night and around, because I have to go turn off water or something in my yard, right? And it's like pitch black. And I'm just kind of wondering, is there a snake going to bite me, right? You know? So I'm probably not going to trip because I've made that walk before. But if I don't have a flashlight, I'm not really sure what I'm stepping in. I'm sure everyone's done this before. Okay. It's a little bit unnerving, isn't it? You know, a little bit unnerving to walk, you know, even if it's a path you've gone through before, you don't know 100% if there isn't like an animal or something that's there you can't anticipate. Bringing a flashlight would be the wise thing to do, right, in that scenario, rather than just do it anyway. So, okay. Any other questions about that? That whole relationship. So we're going to conclude with this. Threefold despairing of life, okay, that he gives us in the rest of the section. So he's got three things that he's going to despair of 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 his work, okay? And this is going to be, quite frankly, the proper Christian view towards, you know, towards an errant search for meaning under the sun. So if you're searching for meaning under the sun, if that's what you're doing, and that's how maybe you've been living your life, here's your application, and that is to despair of it, just to give that up, right? And not to give up the search for wisdom, not to give up your work, right? That's not it. It's to give up that desire, right, to find meaning in those things under the sun. So he does it three times here, and that's really for emphasis, okay? Verse 17, so I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and a striving after wind. So all this work and searching, okay, inquiry that he went on was futility. Verse 18, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor. Okay, so this is the second one. For which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to a man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. All right, once again, you know, he may want to be a God king, but he can't be a God king, because everything, all of his domain has to go to someone else, right? Michelangelo carved his David, but he doesn't possess it today, and whoever he carved it for doesn't necessarily possess it today. So, because it always has to be passed on to someone else. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor, which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. So not only can you not take your wealth with you when you die, but you have to leave it to someone who may or may not value it the way you do, and may or may not take care of it the way you do, or may or may not be a blessing to them. You know, the wealth that you leave to your heirs may destroy them. Okay, there's all kinds of stories of that, or they may have completely different, desires. Right, my kids, Dwight and Hannah, both were in the Bell Choir, you know, here in Fort Worth, and it was funded by one particular family who paid the salaries of the Bell Choir and the trips and all the everything that went on was a result of the funding of this one couple. And they had passed away a number of years ago, quite a few years ago. And this foundation that they left continued to keep things going. Okay. Well, about 4 years ago, approximately 4 years ago or so, the last person who knew them passed away. Okay. And guess who took control of the foundation? The kids, right? And what happened to the Bell Choir? Any guesses? No more, right? No more. That foundation money went somewhere else. Why? Right? Who knows whether your kids are going to want to continue your legacy, right? Whatever that is. Anyway, that's just an example here from Fort Worth. Public one. Verse 20, therefore I completely despaired of all the work of my hands, fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, when he gives his legacy to one who has not labored for them, this too is vanity and a great evil. Okay, so he's going to, you know, you think that you're going to get, that all you strive for is going to give you value after you die. Not only does the person who comes after you and takes possession may be wise or maybe a fool, you have no control over that, but they don't even deserve it. Okay. Right. You know, you're going to work your tail off, save a bunch of money and give it to someone who doesn't deserve it. Right. I mean, like they didn't work for it themselves. Let's put it that way. Okay. They're just getting it, okay? So, he said, this too is vanity and a great great evil, you know. So that's how that's how this section ends. So in conclusion, you know, in terms of application, let's just remember, right, that the pursuit, right, of something new or something better is not going to, you know, in any way nullify the conclusion that Solomon is, you know, proposing here. We have worldly possessions, but let's not, you know, grasp them too tightly. Okay, they're, you know, they're not things that we're going to take with us. You know, the search for profit or toil under the heaven, apart from God, okay, is ultimately a search in vanity or in vain. Okay, it's God alone who gives significance to life. God alone takes what we do in life, the work that we do, and gives it eternal significance and eternal purpose. He is the one who maintains and holds the power, right, to take your life and give it ultimate meaning. And he said, right, Christ said that if you give a cup of water to someone who's thirsty, right, that won't be forgotten. And that's one of the most encouraging things in this topic, right, that has ever been spoken. Okay, and that is this idea that God is going to take your life, even the smallest little things that you've done, and he can take that and convert it into a permanent record, a permanent blessing, a permanent reward in heaven. Or even the littlest thing, he can do that. So don't think that your life under the sun has no meaning. It only has no meaning apart from God, apart from Christ. Right? That aspect of life lived apart from Christ and apart from God ultimately is just chaff, right? It really just blows away. But when God looks at your life and says, well done, good and faithful servant, that life that you've lived will be converted into a permanent, a valuable, significant thing in eternity. Okay. Another good picture as we close here is the picture of the elders throwing their crowns before Christ in the book of Revelation. That's a great example. So the crowns are these, you know, this valuable thing, right, that these elders have. And yet, what are they doing with them? They're using them in eternity to glorify God. Okay. And that is ultimately where meaning comes from, is when your life is used in eternity and the things you've done are used in eternity to bring glory and honor to God. So that's how you judge what you do, how you live, you know, how you work, how you love, how you interact with each other. Will those things bring God glory in eternity? And if the answer is yes, praise God, because, you know, you're living in a way that does have meaning and have eternal significance. And in as much as that's true, yeah, that's it. All right, well, let's pray and we will head over next door. Our Heavenly Father, we do come before you with humble hearts, asking for your wisdom and guidance. We pray that you would teach us to recognize the futility of chasing after worldly pursuits and to find true meaning and purpose in these things that please you and give you ultimate glory in eternity. And we ask these things, Lord, that as we desire to have eternal significance, but we desire to do so in a way that you recognize and in a way, Lord, that you have given us or of you have spelled out in your word. We ask, Lord, for wisdom in doing all of these things. In the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, amen.